Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
We are here bright and early this Friday morning. I got John up at 6 a.m. to podcast at my 9 a.m. So we are excited to join you on this workday or not workday if you have it off. And we're talking 46, episode 5, but in the past.
We sure are. McKenna, how did you feel about this episode? Because let's be honest, this is our first episode that wasn't Yanu-focused the entire season. So how are you feeling about it?
Positive about that, but I just fear now that, like, because we had the Tika 3, right? We're going to have now the Yanu 3, and it's like, I don't want that to be the merge focus, but it's going to be the merge focus. Like, I wish we got rid of another one today. I would have rather had a more grueling pre-merge than a annoying post-merge.
I don't know if that's the case, because if that were the case, I think we would have seen more of Yanu in this episode, other than, hey, we still don't have Flint, which was clearly the storyline they were pushing this time when, you know, Jeff continuously talked about them being losers. It was Arch. Let's be honest. We haven't had a sassy Jeff like this in a while.
I know, right? Like, when I think Kenzie said it, like, oh, sassy Jeff. And I was like, that's making the compilation.
Yeah.
Of all the sassy Jeff moments.
It was really interesting seeing how these other tribes, you know, had to play the game. And we've seen hints at Nami. And, I mean, it became very clear in this episode that Nami wasn't going to tribal council, in my opinion, and made it really.
And they will never go to tribal
council. And they will never go to tribal council. Nami will never go to tribal council. Members of Nami will, but the Nami tribe itself will not. It was interesting seeing how things on Sika broke down, because up to this point, I don't think any of us really had an idea exactly what was happening on Sika. And to see that the Charlie's Angels weren't actually where things were going to go, I think caught a few people by surprise this week.
Yeah, agreed. So let's get into our outwit, outplay, and outlast moments of the episode. We're going to start with our outwit, which is the cover of this episode of The Rewind. We have JT, Kim, and Maria. What do they all have in common? Well, they're the center points of their tribe. Everyone is going to them for information, wanting to work with them, and being like the kind of pinpoint of their tribes.
Yeah, and the other strategy they have in common is if they were watching this video, they would like it and subscribe to the channel. So you should too. But, okay, I think let's talk about Maria here first. And where why would we compare Maria to two of arguably the most dominant winners in Survivor history?
Mm-hmm.
So when we view Maria in this, it became very clear that every single person on SIGA wants Maria in on their plans. Maria has positioned herself in a way where not only do people want to work with her, but also they feel they are working with her. I mean, mm-hmm. We have obviously we knew about the Charlie Maria connection. We had that very early on in the season. We knew Maria was part of Charlie's Angels and had a connection to both Mo and Jem. But and yes, the parent connection was made between Maria and Tim early on in the premiere. Yeah. But we never really got to a point where we could see any of it in action because, I mean, Sika's just been chilling. They've been vibing. And now that we have Tim go on this journey and say that his plus one is Maria, that's the person he feels like he's working close to, it became very apparent. Maria is just enamored her tribe. And we saw it even last episode when they lost the reward challenge and Maria really blamed herself. We saw everyone kind of coming to her support. It's very clear now that this isn't just, oh, hey, someone on our tribe's down. We're trying to vibe. It's everyone on this tribe is so pulled into Maria. And just like she has this magnetic personality that brings people to her, that puts her, it's really hard to explain it, but like it puts her kind of almost above everyone else in that tribe just because she seems to be this linchpin that holds everyone mm-hmm. together.
Yeah, exactly. So my example is JT. We also want to honorable mention Tom Westman, but the episode of Token Genes that we're watching over on the Patreon is very focused around JT. So we wanted to highlight him a little bit in our live show. So I'm going to go with JT. He, once he hits the merge, I mean, even before the merge, he has his allies and stuff, you know, Taj, Steven, and nobody really wants to get him out. But once he hits the merge, Coach, Tyson, Debbie, Timbira, all fall in love with JT and don't want him to leave the game. When he's obviously the clear winner, Brendan even is like, if I can't win it, I want to make sure JT does win the game. So it's insane that like this one dude is just like that charismatic, that likable, and he has a whole other tribe who he hasn't spent any time with being like, all right, yeah, he's the guy.
Yeah, it's really weird rewatching Token Genes, knowing that JT, you know, gets to the very end of the game, sweeps the game at the end, because you can't quite see it. And yes, there are these hints in the and the episode we were covering on the Patreon really is, I think, the turning point where it becomes incredibly obvious JT is getting to the end, because we do have this confessional from Brendan. But throughout that entire episode, you have people saying, yeah, JT's the best. Literally, like, the best human being I've ever met. And mm-hmm. because of that, it allows JT to really gather information, know exactly what's going on, and make decisions based on that information. And I think that's really what it comes down to and where the comparison to Maria comes. Because Maria and Charlie end up in the middle in this episode, where they have the choice between, okay, we can go with the girls, with Jem and Mo, or we can go with the guys, with Ben and Tim. And yeah, Ben plays it really well for mm-hmm. convincing them that they have to get rid of Jem despite not having a vote. That's impressive. But ultimately, the decision came down to Maria and Charlie. And maybe we're viewing Maria too positively and we're jumping the gun on Maria here. But it's that conversation that happened on the journey that really leans it towards Maria over Charlie in this instance. And it'll be interesting to see if Maria can do what JT did come emerge. Are people going to be so enamored and in love with her that they just want to work with her no matter what?
Yeah. So like, it might have been Charlie being like, hey, I don't want to get rid of Ben. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he's going to Maria with this. Like, he, yeah. The Brendan plan was not JT's plan, but people went to him with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, exactly. I think it's a little bit more of that aspect where, like, everyone is coming to her with the information and she just has to sit there and look pretty. And, yeah. Like, get all of this and then decide what she wants to do. Because she could have forced Charlie's hand.
Yeah, because she has the extra vote, right? She and that's really what helps Maria here is because she has the extra vote, she, no matter what, was the sole decider. Like, the deciding point on who goes home here. She didn't need Charlie in order to do that. Obviously, she wanted Charlie to be on it because they're working closely together. But it's very clear that if this continues, and maybe because they've gone to a pre-merge tribal council now, it can't continue, and Maria's spot kind of gets blown up a little bit because of this. I guess it really depends how, like, Mariah reacts in the mergatory situation next week.
I feel like they could spin it to where, oh my gosh, Jem attacked me in the woods.
Yeah, I'm sure. yes, that was the machete hammer scene was
insane.
Survivor. So good.
Let's get into
my example here, and I'm going even more egregious than comparing her to JT. I think we're looking. I'm getting Kim Spradlin vibes from Mariah here.
Oh,
big thing! What? Because man, Kim Spradlin's one of my all-time favorite players of Survivor, and to compare someone to her is not something I would do lightly. She and we haven't been able to see if she has the strategic acumen to really match up with Kim. But I do think we've seen this mist from Mariah that we did see from Kim. And it's, again, goes back on that idea that everyone in this tribe wants to work with Mariah. They realize Mariah is someone who is intelligent, is strong, is sociable, and someone they want to spend time with. Is Mariah the type of person who is going to completely take her initial tribe and be able to control it through a merge situation to the point where they decimate the opposing tribe? Quite possibly. I think it's honestly wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. But at the same time, Kim does it with a smile on her face and people were almost happy to lay down on their own swords for her. And I think that's what the biggest potential for Mariah is here is
Maria,
yes. They have the same, they're almost the same name on the same tribe. Why did you do this to us, Survivor? Why? But I think Maria really does have that potential.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of whether we see it manifest.
Even more than that, I think she will have the options that Kim had, where Kim kept saying, I have options, I can go with these people. And then she made a choice. And then within that, she had options to go with these people. And then she made a choice. Like, she always had tiers of options within her options, which insane.
Yes. And granted, the three tribe format does kind of limit your options a little more. Or maybe it expands them more. We really haven't gotten to a point where we've seen someone be able to take advantage of the three tribe model that way. The big thing going into this merge is Nami, despite having lost Randon, has still never been to a tribal council. So they're the exploitable tribe in this instance.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how Maria approaches that. Also how she approaches the decimated Yanu tribe and how she approaches the recently blindsided Mo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. anything else on our outwit moments, John?
No, I don't think so.
Alrighty. So we are going to move on into outplay. And that is Survivor trivia. I mean, John and I were watching this episode twitching because of we could do this probably blindfolded. I know you need to see the logos, but I feel like we could probably do it blindfolded. It was just one of those things that, okay, if you've seen Survivor out of order, sure. But I feel like it's something as a fan, you kind of develop the knowledge of with, you know, oh, I watched this one first, this one first, this one first. I feel like you always get an itching for a rewatch or an itching for, I want to know the context of what I'm watching. So when your friend gives you things out of order, you're like, but wait, I watched Heroes versus Villains before Fans versus Favorites, before, you know, Cook Islands or Panama. Like, this is something you might want to know. Why is, you know, Micronesia dominating in Heroes versus Villains?
Also, like, if your friend gives you the order McKenna just listed, terrible. They're a bad friend. They're a bad friend starting you at the end of the journey for Parvati and being like, yeah, just start there and then go back and see where she came from. Terrible friend. But alas, I watch Survivor every week with my roommate who's not a massive Survivor fan, but they explain this challenge. And I'm like, yeah, I could literally rattle off every single one of these seasons in chronological order. And I did it right then and there before Hunter finished the puzzle, before they finished showing Hunter finished the puzzle. But I think this is a big thing. And it kind of ticked off a few people because the super fans in the audience were like, yes, obviously I can do this really easily. And we're constantly shown over and over again that the fans, that the players playing the new era of Survivor are super fans. And I think we kind of forget that some of them are newer fans that are brought in by Netflix, that are brought in just by, you know, the streaming opportunities for Survivor. COVID sparked a lot of people to watch this. And I think what it really comes down to is there are super fans who have watched every season of Survivor once. And those of us who are sitting there being like, what are you talking about? Those of us who know the chronological order, who didn't necessarily like grow up watching Survivor. And I mean, yes, there are a lot of us who did grow up and have watched Survivor from the very beginning. It's that second rewatch that you watch chronologically.
Mm-hmm. I started right out with Borneo. I was
I don't know how we managed to keep you around then.
Well, because, all right, so I watched, if you guys don't know yet, all right, I started my Survivor journey by watching Richard Hatch on The Biggest Loser. So I had to start with Richard Hatch. So I went with Borneo because it was like, I won Survivor. So I had to see what season like of Survivor he won, what the heck Survivor was. So I started with Borneo. I was like, okay, it's pretty good. And then just kept going.
Yeah, that's great. Borneo does not hold up as a season. I'll say it. You've heard us talk about Borneo on the Patreon. You know I say that. It's still an entertaining watch, and it's still a great starting point for Survivor. I'm so glad. And it was a great starting point for Hunter too. Yeah. But we've entered this era of the supposed super fan when it comes to Survivor. And it's interesting to see Survivor be self-referential like this, because it's happened a few times. But it's always on returning seasons. It's always on seasons where they're really celebrating the show.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those self-referential things are the second chances when every single challenge run that season was a past challenge that people on the season have lost. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, even All-Stars did that too. And All-Stars is where I'm going to go with this, because we had the trivia challenge in All-Stars, which recapped the first 7 seasons of the show. And it's really interesting at that point to see these people who are really involved in the Survivor community. Again, it can't be understated how big of a cultural significance early Survivor had.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why we have 46 seasons of Survivor now is because of how much attention was given to these early seasons of Survivor. All-Stars was this weird TV moment where you didn't think you would ever see these players again because it was there had never been a returnee season yet. And all of a sudden, they're bringing back most of our favorites from a lot of the seasons preceding it. And, you know, some random people that you're like, yeah, you were on that season. And it gives us, it delivers this moment where you have people from all seven of these seasons. Yes, there was not equal season representation on All-Stars at all. They only got the single person from Pearl Islands. They only got a single person from Thailand. But at the same time, there's this trivia. And it's, you see the people succeeding at it because they're like, yeah, I lived this moment. Of course I know the answer to it.
Yeah, and they were in tribes. So at this point, they were like, okay, who was on, you know, Amazon who can answer the... Not Amazon. Yes. Oh, yeah, Amazon. But Rob Sesternino is voted out of here already.
And Jenna left the game already. So, yeah. There's
like, all right, who knows this moment? Jenna Lewis is like, okay, I got this, 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 and this. But, you know, Jenna is... There could be only one member of the season left, or all the members of the season are on another tribe, because it was during the swap where Amber's on the other side with Lex, Kathy, and all them. Mm-hmm. So, like, there could be moments where you don't have that season in your grouping, and without a lot of rewatches like we have now, like we have the ability to with Hunter this season, it's really interesting that they're very much pulling on their remembrance of the game.
Yeah, and that's where it's really different than what we see Survivor do with trivia in the future. Because at this point, it's very much, hey, do you remember this moment? And not, hey, have you watched this show?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. That's just All-Stars in general.
We also have covered this episode of All-Stars over on the Patreon. So if you want to listen to us deep dive this episode, it is the one where Amber gets saved. So it's a good time. It's a good time. But my moment for this is Micronesia. I told John outright, I was like, Micronesia, my moment. Because they had this wheel with season logos, and Jeff is just like, all right, let me know what season answers this question. And then people are like still, oh, that was my season? Oh, crap. Like, they're not, nobody's remembering anything but Eric.
Now, to be fair, this challenge happens at the final five of this game. Right?
Yes.
Counting that correctly? Yes, final five. It is so far into the game, you're probably going to forget everything about your previous season. You're probably forgetting everything about the current season you're on at that point. But with fans versus favorites, it is absolutely more of a celebration of the fan side of Survivor. That's where it's different from All-Stars, in my opinion, because All-Stars was a celebration of the show that preceded it. And just like the moments before All-Stars and the people before All-Stars, fans versus favorites was that embracing of the idea of these people are fans of Survivor. And yes, I get it. Like the moniker of fan might be very loosely applied to the people on this season at times.
Yeah.
But it's also have Eric Reichenbach, right? You have mm-hmm. Eric Reichenbach, who is someone who today would be considered a super fan mm-hmm. and knows all of these moments and everything like that, and was the fanboy out on the island.
Yeah, exactly. And like, we were getting some recruits as fans, but you know, this is also the era of, we've got a bunch of these DVDs out now. Mm-hmm. Like, watch them if you missed episodes, or if you, you know, missed the entire season, catch up. So there is that rewatchability of Survivor that we have through streaming, but it's just, you got to go buy the DVD. And I think this challenge is really interesting because it is fans playing against favorites. Mm-hmm. And it's, you see the favorites stumbling on their own questions from their own seasons. It's just something that, like, whenever they do this challenge, I play along as if I haven't seen this season 20,000 times. And I like play along and I'm like, how could you not know this? This is you, you know.
But to be fair, some of these moments are not moments that they were there to witness either, right? Like that is the big thing too that we have to remember as fans sometimes, is that even when we do have trivia with Survivor players, sure, a question could be asked about their season. And especially now, I think if you even look at it now, how many people like obsessively watch their own season for every little detail, right? Are you going to know what's happening on the other tribe during the game? Are you going to remember that moment? Are you going to remember your own experience playing Survivor? And even if we look at Survivor players now who are going to live parties and hosting live parties all the time, how much are they actually paying it to getting an opportunity to pay attention to these episodes?
Zero. It's impossible.
Yeah, exactly, right? So, and I'm not saying current Survivor players don't watch their seasons. They clearly do. But there's those moments around it where you get kind of caught up in the 15 minutes that you're given by this show sometimes.
Yeah. Well, we are a big fan of Survivor Trivia. So please, Jeff, bring more challenges like this back. I think it was so much fun to get this attempt at a super fan rather than like I created this puzzle in my backyard. Like,
yes,
if you could show your Survivor knowledge, like you become more of my favorite player because Hunter just like dropped a few spots.
It was because he didn't mention Michelle in the co-rom segment, right?
I'm not Phil, but yes, I agree.
This challenge, I mean, again, anyone watching, anyone who's probably listening to this podcast at 9 o'clock on a Friday morning.
Dedication. We love
dedication.
You.
could do this challenge pretty easily. I believe Phil said it literally takes the time to move the blocks and that's it. It's not a thinking thing.
Yep.
All of these season logos had the name of the season on them.
Yeah. If you remove, John and I were talking about this, like it might be a little bit harder if you remove the names from the logos, because you have to then remember the logo, but it's still like those are ingrained in your, in your brain.
What I really want, and this is going out to any Survivor production who happens to listen to this podcast, when we have these challenges where they have to flip over the hourglass for their timing, please tell us how long the hourglass ticks, like, goes for. That's just what I want to know, because you know what? We've had a lot of moments that you and I have discussed, that I know I've discussed with patrons and with fans in general, about how, oh, well, how are you messing up that challenge? And obviously we're not taking into consideration the fatigue of being on an island and not eating and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But at least give us a time limit so we know what we're working with.
If this man has 10 minutes trying to decide between these logos, I'm going to riot.
But if he had like 2 minutes, a little more justifiable. Like, yeah. I want to know how much I should be disappointed in Hunter today.
Yeah, exactly. Well, those were our outplay moments. Now we are moving into outlast and Jem voted out with an idol in her pocket. We do want to highlight Brendan in Token Chains getting voted out with an idol. That will be discussed more in depth over on the Patreon. So we wanted to give John and I a little bit more of a chance to talk about a few more moments with people getting voted out with an idol here on the live show.
Yeah. And one of the bigger things when it comes to being voted out with an idol is this isn't often something we see in the pre-merge. There are some pre-merge moments, but a lot of the time there's emerge moments because that's when idols really become more pertinent and people kind of get this feeling that they want to hold on to them more. I don't... Were you surprised when Jem went home this episode?
I mean, kind of, yeah. Like, I was a little surprised that they actually did it rather than like, oh, she's going. Because in the beginning, like, cast assessment-y before the season starts, I was like, why is everyone so high on Jem? Like, I don't understand. And then, like, what we got of her in the season was very fun. And I was like, oh, okay. But then I would have hated anyone being booted here because it just felt unfair. Like, they didn't have an edit. Okay. They didn't have their time for me to really get to know them. So I guess I should have expected Jem, Charlie, or Ben to go here because those were the ones that got the most time on screen.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair assessment because those are the members of this tribe that we've spent time with. I don't know. We got some time with a lot of people. Just none of it has really been strategic time.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim was literally invisible on our screens until he mentioned that he hadn't pooped for 10 days today or in this week's episode. So it would seem weird for Tim to go. It was very clear it was between Jem and Ben pretty early in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, but like you said, a lot of people were really high on Jem going into this season. Premiere, she has essentially a winner's quote. So I think a lot of people were surprised by this.
Yeah.
And being voted out with an idol is really surprising when it's the person who said they would play an idol whenever they got it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
If you haven't had a chance to listen to Digging Deeper this week, where Troy Sand joins Phil and Blake, like the three of them talk about how Jem seemed like a front runner on this tribe. So to see her go is really surprising. This is a moment where it really plays into the hubris of Survivor players. And I think personally, idols are one of the trickiest advantages to play with because you're either like, you're kind of on like two sides of a spectrum with it. And yes, we've seen a lot of very skillful idol plays in the past and those perfect moments, but you're either so paranoid that you play it when you don't need to and you play it earlier than you should, or you're so confident that you don't play it when you need to.
Yeah.
I think having an idol can sometimes lower your approach to the rest of the game because you have that safety net. And I think sometimes what we see is something like what we have with Jem here, where she is feeling confident. And I mean, I'll straight up say it seemed like she was feeling a bit cocky because she had this idol. And because of that, her social game, and granted, we don't really have a way to evaluate her social game because of the edit not giving us those moments.
Mm-hmm.
Her social game did not seem to benefit from her having an idol. It seemed to get very bad because of it. Yeah. And just an idol is so dangerous, not only for people who can kind of get sniped by an idol, but also just from people who have idols in general.
So my moment, I feel, is very similar to Jem, and that's Aubrey in Edge of Extinction. I think the Aubrey idol vote out here, she feels solid with her group. She thinks she has a voting block. She thinks there's a clear target. And then all of a sudden, her people flip on her, and she is now the one leaving the game. She thinks she's on top. She has this idol. She has a group of people that she can trust. And then she is getting her torch snuffed and going to the edge.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. Aubrey and Phil touched on this, I believe in last week's recap, that like this Aubrey boot in Edge of Extinction is a different type of editing we get for a Survivor because we see everything from Aubrey's perspective that entire episode.
Yeah.
So we really get an idea of what she's thinking at this vote, which is seemingly easy, right? She has people she's been working with the entire time. Wendy's a very easy target. Makes sense. But this is kind of, it's, I think it's really similar to what's going on SIGA, because these are people who haven't really had to vote people out yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it really comes down to. When we get to this point in the game, when we get to a post-swap situation, pre-merge situation, that later half of the pre-merge, and people haven't had to go to tribal council, they don't know how people lie, they don't know how people present themselves in tribal council, they can't figure out how Jeff is asking questions that would kind of give them hints to what's going on at tribal council. People get a little more, I don't know, I guess bold with their strategies and how to approach votes at that point.
Yep.
So Aubrey, having been a two-time Survivor player previously, felt really confident with the relationships she was making, and didn't think, because they weren't going so hard at Tribal Council and everything, didn't think that these people were playing as hard as they were, and mm-hmm. didn't think that these people were looking to blindside. And I think Jem's kind of caught in the same situation here.
Like, why would the first vote be a blindside? No, we'll just knock out Tim or Ben.
Especially a blindside against the four-person alliance that already exists. That has exactly. existed, as far as we know, from the beginning of the game.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I really like this Aubrey moment, because also she is in good spirits as well. When we get Jem's final words, Jem is still in good spirits, like, oh, with an idol too. And Aubrey's like, oh, damn, you guys got me. So it was a blindside, but like not a bitter, upset kind of blindside. It was still in the, oh, we're playing Survivor. And like, that's great.
Yeah. Do you, before we move on to my selection here, do you know who the first person to go home pre-merge with an idol in their pocket was?
I feel like Garrett's too late.
No, Garrett is in fact the answer.
Okay.
Garrett Adelstein. You're correct. But yeah, that is a little late, right? I granted that's like 14 seasons into idols being idols, really.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Garrett is the first person to go home pre-merge with an idol in their pocket. But we're actually going to talk about someone post-merge for my choice here. I want to go with Sophie in Winners at War, because I feel like this was also one of the bigger blindside moments. Yes, okay, arguably, every time someone goes home with an idol in their pocket, they're clearly being blindsided. But yeah, this was one of the ones that I think really caught a lot of people off guard. Obviously, this is coming from the This Is Extortion episode of Winners at War, and no one could predict what Tony did in that episode. No one. Anyone who tells you they totally knew that was what was going to happen that episode is lying to you.
Yeah, because didn't that happen at the live tribal?
Wasn't it was set up beforehand. Tony had kind of been working with that other side a bit, with the Michelle and Jeremy side, to kind of figure out how to approach this preceding this episode. But once we get into it, that's where Tony really kind of goes into overtime and works really hard, and eventually, you know, snows everyone. And we've seen, like, post-game press that it wasn't as much of a blindside as people made it out to be. Sarah, they showed Sarah kind of blowing up at Tony in the next episode, but it was kind of an overacting moment. But mm-hmm. I think this is, again, one of those moments where there's uncertainty, but you think it's very certain how a vote's going. And it comes down to game awareness. Jem should have been more concerned holding this idol, simply because everyone's been talking about the idol for days, as far as we know at this point, because of the idol search in which Jem forced them to go into. I know a lot of people have thoughts on Jem re-hiding this Beware advantage, but ultimately, I don't think it was a good move.
Yeah. This was insane. Both Jem and Sophie, I feel, were like crazy. it's so hard. I feel like I've never had the honor of having an idol, but I feel like it would be insane to know when the moment is to play it. There's only whenever I've played games, there's like two that I like there. I have feelings that I know I'm going, but I never have anything to do about it. So like, it's okay that I know that I'm going. So like, I have no, if I had an idol, would I know that I'm going, or would I have that like safety net in my head being like, I'm good. So it's tough. I wonder if the idol impacts the thought process of safety and like if they're on the chopping block.
I think it does give you a false sense of security. And ideally, everyone can hold their idol to final five and secure themselves a spot in fire making with it. That's just not the reality of the situation a lot of the time. And I think having the idol, again, it lowers your ability to perceive what's around you completely.
Mm-hmm.
Jem, because she had so many people thinking about the idol, it was only a matter of time before everyone was like, Jem probably has it, right? It just, she gave the opportunity for people to observe the way she reacted to everything. And kudos to Ben. We don't know exactly how Tim and Ben kind of like sniffed this out, but they did. And hopefully there's like a secret scene that shows us. I'd really like to know how Tim figured it out, or if he was just taking a wild guess.
Yeah.
But this is, but with Aubrey, it was a little different because Aubrey's idol was known, because those idols all had to be split in half before you could claim them.
Sophie's.
Yes. Yes. That's what I meant.
It's like Aubrey.
No. Sophie. The idol had to be split in half, and then so there was more knowledge about the existence of the idol and everything, which made Tony's move just like that much more impressive. But I feel like when your idol is known, or at least when everyone has an idea that your idol exists in some capacity, whether it's Jem's capacity, where it's like they don't know for sure Jem has it, but they know someone probably has it, or with Sophie, where it's like very clearly you know exactly who has it.
Yeah.
When you have an idol, you have to pay extra attention to how everyone else is interacting with each other, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hardest thing to do with an idol, because it gives you that security and it makes you think, okay, I'm safe. I don't have to play as hard. I think you do still have to play hard, but you also have to play well and not be Jem and brandish a machete as you are talking to someone.
Yes, exactly. So unless you have any other thoughts on, all right, so everyone go over to the Patreon. Today we are uploading Token Sheen season 18 episode 9, Biggest Fraud in the Game. That is the episode we are watching today, and it, for a post-merge episode comparing to a pre-merge, it's actually pretty darn close. Like, there are a lot of similarities within this episode of Token Genes to this episode of 46. So it was a fun watch.
Yeah, it's a fun episode. It's fun revisiting Token Genes from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Not as good on a full season rewatch, but individual moments, quite nice.
John, what's going on in the Specialist Universe?
Well, that's a great question. If you haven't already watched Phil and Will Breakdown Episode 5, go ahead and do that. You should do that. like I said, yesterday, Troyzan Robertson from Survivor One World at Survivor Game Changers joined Phil and Blake. It's a really good conversation. So the digging deeper, it's a little longer than usual. It's not the 20 minutes. It's about an hour long. A lot of insight into idols and a lot of talk about idols in that episode. So give that a watch. McKenna and Celestina broke down The Amazing Race last night. So have a listen on that. Join us on Sunday. Phil and Will will be joined by Sabaya from last season for the predictions and power rankings this week. That should be a very fun podcast.
Yeah.
It'll be a very fun podcast.
As someone who also went out with an idol pre-merge.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Sabaya's situation was a little different.
Yeah.
With having to give up a vote to prolong the life of the idol.
Yeah.
Also, great pre-merge Blindside there. So give that a listen too. Monday, Phil and I are starting our new series with the Cinema Specialist. You haven't seen that. It's going to be a, we're going to be focusing on films that are really popular that maybe, you know, you that make you say you haven't seen that when someone tells you they haven't seen it. Plus, you know, usually a deeper cut related to that movie somehow. It could be thematically, it could be more like the writer of the movie, it could be the title of the movie, something like that. This week we are talking Godzilla from 1954. That's the original Godzilla, which is 70 years old this year. And we are talking 1998's Godzilla with Matthew Broderick. That's going to be a fun discussion, so make sure you tune into that. Tuesday, Phil and Will will be back to recap Deal or No Deal Island. And Wednesday, I think on Wednesday, they'll be back with another Phil and Will show. And they'll, of course, be there to recap episode 6 as well. And then Thursday, we get a new episode of Digging Deeper, and McKenna and Phil are going to be back talking The Amazing Race. So much content, and the best way to know when it all goes live is subscribe to the channel.
Subscribe.
Like this video. Subscribe to the channel. It'll all help. Become a patron. There are so many things happening on the Patreon. You think we just listed a lot of podcasts here? Wait until you see what's on the Patreon.
Insane.
There's a lot. So go to patreon.com/thespecialist. Hit it up. $10 specialists or $10 and $20 patrons will be able to hear McKenna and I talk token sheens. And there's so much more content there. So if you are not getting enough content from this channel, that's the place to go. After that, I guess we will see you next week.
Alrighty. Goodbye.